It's Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's yesteryear. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier, bringing you an hour of drama. Later on, we hear the story expert opinion on the Silver Theater, but right now, the Hallmark Playhouse, with George Agnew Chamberlain's story, The Phantom Filly. This story would be turned into an Oscar-nominated motion picture in 1957 with Pat Boone and Shirley Jones. We hear Ed Begley and Myra Marsh in the CBS adaptation from July 29, 1948.
Remember, a Hallmark card when you care enough to send the very best. From Hollywood, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you an exciting dramatization of an unforgettable story on the Hallmark. Tonight's story was chosen from the world of fiction by one of the world's best-known authors. Hallmark is proud to present the distinguished novelist, Mr. James Hilton.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight on the Hallmark Playhouse, we present the first dramatization of a novel by George Agnew Chamberlain called The Phantom Filly. This is the sort of story that just couldn't be written by a man who hadn't lived and also loved the kind of life he wrote about. So I asked Mr. Chamberlain about this, and sure enough, he had. And not only that, but he remembered it with warmth and humor. I like this story because it gives us a breath of the open air and somehow the freshness and charm of the American soil. And also, to be quite candid, because it's about horses. The love of a man for a horse is one of the oldest and best loves on earth. And I wasn't surprised when Mr. Chamberlain confessed that of all the stories he'd written, this was one of those he'd enjoyed most writing. As we talked, he told me another thing, that of all the tributes he received, the one he valued most came from an old man here in California who said there wasn't a single mistake about horses in it. And this old man surely should have known, because he belonged to a trade rapidly going out these days. He was a blacksmith.
I suppose Mr. Chamberlain must have raised some trotters himself, Mr. Hilton.
Yes, he raced them, trained them, and bred them. So what could be more natural than for him to write a thoroughbred story like this, The Phantom Filly? His name was Sparky Thornton, and he was old for a boy, but young for a man, and very new to Roundhouse Farm. He tried not to show it on that first morning of his arrival at his Uncle Thunderbolt's decrepit horse farm, but he'd been bitterly disappointed. There was one horse in the decaying stable, the lady, and the lady was blind. Whereas across the road behind a half-mile-long fence was Low Meadows Farm, gifted with magnificent and numerous horses. Forgive Sparky Thornton for prying loose that board in the fence. Forgive him his boyish trespass, and don't say it serves him right, as that black, neighing monster in the paddock behind the fence utters a terrifying cry and charges wildly at the young intruder.
Holy cow! Easy there, boy. Easy. Easy.
For heaven's sake, how did you get in there? Get out!
Yeah? How?
He's a killer.
Easy, boy. So, boy.
His name is Hamilcar Chief.
So, boy. So, Chief.
Why are you showing off to you?
Look out. I'm going to try to vault the paddock rail.
Well, he's never behaved like that before.
Here I come. Oh, there. I skinned my knee, though.
You're lucky to get out alive.
Oh, I have a way with horses.
The chief has a way with people. He kills them.
Nice horsey. Hey, what's that skimpy rig you're driving?
Why, it's a racing stalky, of course. Where are you from?
Roundhouse Farm across the road.
You know you're in enemy territory, don't you?
Why, no.
The Bolts and the Bulls don't get along.
Are you a Bull?
Oh, no. I'm Char Bruce. My father's Jed Bruce, and he's manager and chief trainer for Godar Bull.
I'm Sparky Thornton.
You're trespassing.
I guess so.
What's the idea?
I like horses.
That's good enough for me.
So, that dinky rig is a sulky, huh?
And a lot tougher to drive than you think.
It's a girl's tricycle with a horse where the front wheel belongs.
You like to try it?
Get out.
Get in.
What do you call this horse?
Trumpet. All right. Let her go.
Get up now.
Oh, no, no, no. Look out for that drug. It's your mallet head.
I'm doing all right.
You're not. Come back here. Hold the reins further back. And keep your hands on your knees. Keep... Oh, just come back, that's all. Get down out of that sulky.
Why? What's the matter? I was doing all right.
That was the rottenest piece of driving I've ever seen in all my days.
How many days is that?
Why, 17 years. Why?
I'll see you again when you're 17 and a half. Thanks for the buggy ride.
Well, of all the ridiculous
things... Goodbye, Miss Bruce.
Sparky, the girl was right to begin with. You'd no call to trespass on Goodall Boone's property.
Uncle Thunder, I want you to teach me to drive a racing sulky.
You were wrong being on Boone's property. But no nephew of mine is going to be outrid by anyone with Boone's stables.
Sure, Bruce isn't a Boone. She's the trainer's daughter.
I said anyone, Sparky. We'll be out on the old cornfield track every morning, rain or shine, so you can drive a racing sulky. And good. That's all, Sparky. Dismissed.
You're getting it, son. Now it's coming. Use your hands to tell the lady your wishes. It's the hands communicating through the reins that does it. Hands. That's it. Now it's coming.
Aunt Hattie, where's Uncle Thunder this morning?
The attic.
The attic? Oh, I've been waiting out in the cornfield for my driving lesson. I'll go get him.
No, Sparky. Don't go.
Is he sick?
You could call it that. But it's in the heart.
Heart trouble?
Maybe I should say the soul. Oh, once a year comes spring, your uncle hears the trotters trotting. When that happens, seems he can't no ways hold back from drowning out the sound with liquor. And this spring, it's 10 times worse.
Well, why is it worse?
Account of you.
What did I do that was wrong?
You came along 15 years too late, Sparky.
I'm going up to him.
No. No, Sparky, no.
I'm going up, I say.
Go away.
Thunder.
Stay out.
Thunder. Are you all right?
Passable. For a failure.
You're not a failure. Not with me, you're not.
Take a look at Roundhouse Farm. You'll see ruins, dust, mold.
What happened, Thunder?
Godaw Boole and me owned this farm together. We had a fight over firing or not firing the lady's groom. Little thing like that, but I'm a firm man for seeing justice done. All right, I go away to a harness meet. Come back and find out the partnership is busted up. He takes the horses, I got the land. And he fixed that all right. Only horse he let me keep was a lady. Blind.
Poor lady.
Now, blind or not, she's a Morgan mare.
That's good?
That's great. Greatest bloodline in the business.
Thunder, what kind of a horse would you say Hamilcar Chief is?
Great bloodlines, too, but he's gone mean. Why?
Ask and learn. Coming downstairs, Thunder?
I'll be down for dinner. Tell Ma.
I'll tell her.
Well, go on.
Why, I just wanted to say I'm sorry I came 15 years too late.
You'd have been a great driver with those whispering hands of yours if I had the horses.
Well, come downstairs real soon, won't you, Thunder?
Evening, Thunder.
Time I came downstairs.
Did you do the right thing first?
What's that?
Did you pray?
Yes, I did.
What'd you pray for, Thunder?
I prayed for strength.
What else did you pray for?
Forgiveness, I prayed for.
What else?
I prayed for heaven to send me a horse to beat the living tar out of good old Burl.
Thunderbolt. How many times have I told you not to say living tar?
Sorry. Can I have to eat now?
That night, a youth crossed the meadows under the silent stars. Behind him walked a horse who must have been a long time blind to walk so surely in darkness. They crossed the road to an 8-foot fence. The fence yielded easily where it had yielded once before to Sparky Thornton, but the breach was wider this time, much wider. In Hamilcar Chief's stall, the great stallion awoke. The boy closed down the boards of the breached fence and waited alone. Inside came a terrible and triumphant sound.
Sparky. Sparky Thornton.
What's the matter, Thunder?
This is going to be a rough Thanksgiving week for you.
What's the matter?
See this razor strap?
So what?
You're going to get it, boy.
What for?
You're going to tell?
Tell what?
You know what.
Oh, what's wrong with you?
Breed the lady to some cat meat stallion, will you?
Oh, cut that out.
Who was he? Who's the father?
Hamilcar Chief.
Mating the lady with some glue part of a... Hamilcar Chief.
Yeah, I've got a certificate to show for it.
You're lying.
I'm not.
You forged it.
I didn't. I made friends with Hamilcar Chief's groom. He doesn't know I'm your nephew. He gave Godar Bull the certificate to sign, and he signed it.
Where'd you get the $100 fee?
The groom paid it, and I'm paying him back on installments. 20% interest.
Worth it. Worth it.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Hamilcar Chief.
Yes, sir.
You've got to forgive me, son. You've got to.
Oh, forget it.
When the wedding take place?
Last May.
Comes April, we'll have a fool from the lady. Look, Sparky, on your soul. Not a word of this to anybody.
I know.
A secret fool by Hamilcar Chief. I take it back, son. You came just in time. All I needed was the horse. We're going to have a horse now. Greatest ever. Maybe.
On an early April night, an absurd creature made its appearance on Earth. It had a body about a foot long and legs about 2 yards long. It was golden brown and had black stockings, and it wouldn't have taken the practiced eye long to see that Hamilcar Chief was the little beast's father.
As sweet a filly as I ever saw. You can name her, Sparky.
She was born in April. Could we call her the April Star?
Thereafter, Sparky Thornton learned all that Thunder could teach him about harness racing. Day after day, Sparky rose in the misty dawn to do his chores and then to take the reins behind the lady, racing through the sunlit afternoons and then in the stillness of dusk, dreaming of trumpets and triumphs to come for the secret foe, the April Star. Since it was forbidden for anyone now to invade the Roundhouse Farm, Sparky one day walked over to the Bull Farm to talk to Shah Bruce.
Sparky? Why don't I see you anymore?
Busy.
It's been a long time.
It's been very busy.
What with?
Business.
Aren't you going to ask me to go swimming anymore in the pond on your uncle's farm?
I'm going to teach you to drive a sulky soon.
Big talk.
I might even give your dad a lesson or two.
Ha ha.
I'm going to have to race him someday.
Don't be afraid.
I'm going to have to beat him.
Okay.
What'll that mean to us, Shar?
Nothing at all.
You sure?
Sure. Because you'll never beat my dad. Never.
Don't forget what you said, Shar. It'll mean nothing at all. Remember what you said, that's all.
Never mind harnessing the lady today, Sparky. We're taking out the April Star for the first time. You're getting it, boy.
So is she. She understands your hands. You got them. They put Star Savvy up. She's a winner, son. A winner. Great, son. Great. I don't like to work a trotter in winter, but I want both of you to be in shape for the Mettenville meet in April.
Will I be ready, Thunder?
You'll be ready come St. Patrick's Day. You wait and see. Well, sir, what'd I tell you? Comes next month in the Mettenville, and you're ready. What'd I tell you?
I'm scared. A full month in advance, I'm scared.
Oh, who in thunderation is that in the road?
Charbruce.
What'd I tell you about keeping her off the farm?
I'll turn around and go back.
Marty! Marty!
Never mind now. She's seen you.
Oh, April.
Let it go. It had to happen sooner or later.
Marty, Mr. Bowles, what a lovely filly.
Yeah.
And all this time you've been keeping her secret?
Hmm.
Oh, she's beautiful. She...
Go on, Miss Bruce. You were saying...
Hamilcar Chief.
What do you mean, Char?
That filly has Hamilcar Chief written all over her.
Oh, is that silly?
No, it's not.
I know now what you've been up to. A secret foal. You've stolen her, I know.
Oh, Char, what are you crying for? Here, I'll get out.
No, keep away from me. You're a thief and I despise you. I despise you.
Char, don't run off like that.
I never
want to see you. No, wait.
Let her go, Sparky. Don't blame the girl. The April Star is a sword aimed right at her father's heart.
Yeah, I know. Let's go back.
You'll feel all right. Come April in the Mettenville, I hope.
I saw the race, Sparky.
Oh, gee, I'm glad you were here. After all, your dad wasn't driving today.
Why, I came to watch you race. Congratulations, Sparky.
Thanks, Char. Oh, gee.
The April Star is wonderful.
What's Godal Boo saying?
Oh, he's furious because it's Hamilcar Chief's secret soul. Everyone knows it now.
She's the lady's foal, too.
Well, what next?
You know. The Chester Clay Oaks race.
My father drives in that one.
I know.
You'll never beat my father.
Suppose I do beat him.
What? I just want you not to feel bad when you don't beat him.
All right.
Promise?
I won't feel bad.
Then, may I kiss today's winner?
May you?
It's part of the prophets. It's done, you know.
Well, it isn't.
There.
It isn't done enough, is what I always say.
See you at the Chester Clay Oaks meet?
I hope.
And in spite of everything, Sparky, the very best of luck.
Ben. The April Star, after running a bad first heat, then came roaring down the track in the second heat. The Pachisus drives definitely out of the running. And now, after a one-half-hour rest, the April Star and Texfire Abinay, the surviving Bull entry, will fight it out for the right to go on to the great Hamiltonian meet. The third and last heat will be called in 1.5 hours.
Char! Char!
Hello, Sparky.
Oh, I've been looking for you. I thought I'd find you with Tug Variabanae. Where's the handlers? Hey, why are you crying?
I can't tell you.
Well, not because I happen to win the second heat.
No.
Or because I might win the race in the next heat.
Oh, no. They had a fight.
Who?
Father and Godot Bull.
What about?
Mr. Bull called Father terrible names because he lost the second heat. He said...
What did he say? I want to know.
He said, if you let that pimple of a boy beat you again, you're fired.
What did he call me?
Oh, he's such a mean little man.
Well, oh, your dad can always get a big job at some other farm.
Oh, no, he can't. Once you're washed out with Godot Bull, you're finished in harness racing. He ruined Thunder. He'll ruin my dad.
I see. If I win, your father is out of work for good. If I lose...
Oh, no, Sparky. You've got your own race to run and to win. Father wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah. Sure, I've got my race to win. Thunder wouldn't have it any other way.
And Sparky.
Yeah?
From the bottom of my heart, good luck.
Yeah.
Coming into the backstretch now, Cutfire, the lead, and stealing the rail. And here's April Star challenging, pulling up the pass, but Cutfire holds. There's something wrong about April Star. She seems to have plenty of stuff, but she just isn't taking that lead away from Cutfire. There's something definitely wrong, and maybe we won't know until the race is over. And Cutfire still leading April Star.
I'm sorry, April Star. I'm sorry. I've got to do this.
Hands, son. Hands. You got them?
Hands. Sorry, April Star. I'm sorry.
You'll never beat my dad. Never.
It's a dirty trick, April. I got to do it.
Once you're washed out with Godot Bull, you're finished in harness race.
Easy, April Star. Easy, girl. No worry. Easy, soul girl.
I'm a car chief. Forgive me, son. You've got to forgive me.
No, Thunder. No. You've got to forgive me. Now. Hiya! Go, April, go!
Ladies and gentlemen, something is happening out there. April Star suddenly came out of it, and she's surging forward. They're neck and neck now, hop and hop, and she's reaching. The April Star is reaching, reaching, and the April Star wins! She's over it! Wait a minute, ladies and gentlemen, something's wrong again. She's diving straight for the pole. She's heading to go right through the rail. Sparky Barton is fighting to hold her back, but the star is going wild. She's... No, no. Good work, Barton. Good work. He stopped her. And now she's trotting back peaceably to be all harnessed. Hold her on and we'll try to find out exactly what happened.
I'm sorry, April Star. I had to do it. I had to do it, girl.
Sparky.
Oh, God, forgive me. God, forgive me.
Oh, no, Sparky. You had to win and you did. Is that why you're crying?
Sparky, you all right? What happened out there?
Thunder. Thunder, she's blind.
Blind?
April Star, too?
She went blind somewhere near the half. I didn't want to drive her that way, but I had to, Thunder. I had to do it for you. I had to.
One blind horse.
But I couldn't ever race a blind horse again. I just couldn't.
You'll never have to, son. She'll never be unhappy or suffer or go hungry. And there's a job for Jed Bruce and the kind of horse farm I'm going to have now.
There'll be other April Stars, Sparky.
Broodmares and foals in every stall at Roundhouse Farm.
Other April Stars?
Other April Stars. Other April.
I like that.
Other winners.
I like that, too.
Could a girl kiss today's winner? It's part of the profit.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to reinvest that part of the profit. That interest. Big interest.
Now, here again is James Hilton.
Before I tell you about next week's story, I'd like you to know that our excellent cast included Barbara Eiler as Shah and Sam Edwards as Sparky. Ed Begley and Myra Marsh were Thunderbolt and his wife, and Tom Hanlon was the race announcer. And now next week on our Hallmark Playhouse, we have a story that's different. Different at any rate from our previous stories in this series. It satisfies two hankerings that I've had since our program began. One was to do a story of this kind, and the other was to include in our series something by the great American novelist Edith Wharton. We've chosen a story of hers called Afterward. I don't want to spoil it for you by saying too much, but I will throw out this teaser. If the story had a second title or a subtitle, you might call it The Ghost Goes East. Well, at any rate, if you don't get my meaning, or for that matter, even if you do, be sure to listen next Thursday. Then the following Thursday, we shall present The Old Nest, a story by Rupert Hughes. So until next week, this is James Hilton saying good night.
Our music was composed and conducted by Lynn Murray. To be doubly sure of the finest quality, always look on the back of your cards for those three identifying words, a Hallmark card. Hallmark cards are sold only in stores that have been carefully selected to give you expert and friendly service. Remember Hallmark cards when you care enough to send the very best. Now, this is Frank Goss saying goodnight to you all until next week at the same time when James Hilton returns to present Edith Wharton's Afterward. This program came to you from the Hallmark Playhouse. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is KMBC, Kansas City, Missouri.
The Hallmark Playhouse, on Tuned to Yesterday from July 29th, 1948 on CBS. You're listening to an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now on to the story, Expert Opinion, broadcast on the Silver Theater. The CBS broadcast first aired on April 16th, 1939.
International Silver Company presents The Silver Theater. Starring Robert Montgomery in Expert Opinion, directed by Conrad Nagel. Brought to you on behalf of two of the greatest names in silverware, International Sterling, world-famous solid silver, and 1847 Rogers Brothers, America's finest silver plate.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Conrad Nagel greeting you from the stage at the Silver Theater in Hollywood and bringing you the 29th in our new series of dramatic productions. Among the many brilliant personalities whose names grace our guest book for future dates are Melvin Douglas, Constance Bennett, Joan Crawford, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., and Helen Hayes. And now a word about today's story. There are, as I'm sure you all know, really two Bob Montgomerys in one. There's the debonair Bob of such pictures as Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's currently popular Fast and Loose. Then there's that other Bob, a sinister and menacing one who brought us the unforgettable characterization of Danny in Night Must Fall. In debating which of these Messrs. Montgomery to bring to you in Silver Theater, we hit upon the novel idea of presenting both of them in successive weeks. So, while next week, in an entirely different play, you will meet Montgomery the scholar and gentleman, tonight you will meet the other Montgomery, also a scholar, but certainly no gentleman. For Bob's going to play the role of Gerald Conway in Expert Opinion, a psychological drama by True Boardman. The house lights dim, the silver curtain rises. The scene, an office in a metropolitan building. A strange office, large yet somehow dark and somber. Heavy curtains drape the walls and windows, all save where a single shaft of light breaks through and casts its beam across the massive desk. This, the private inner office of Gerald Conway, president and general manager of Conway Investment Company. As we meet him first, he's standing before a combination radio phonograph, listening intently. In the chair before the large desk sits his secretary, Evelyn Speer.
If you're going to keep on playing that record, I'll leave. I thought you sent for me to take dictation.
I did. You're nervous today, Evelyn. Whenever this music upsets you, I know you're not yourself.
And suppose the music does upset me. Who wouldn't it upset? That one melody a dozen times a day, week in, week out, month on end. Why?
Suppose we just call it my eccentric taste in music. But if you will, we'll get to work. Take a letter. To all stockholders in Conway Incorporated. My good friends all, as president and general manager of our great corporation, it is with sincere pleasure that I inform you of a further expansion of our great company. And I...
Oh, there's no need for you to dictate this, you know. I can write it from memory. You're doing now what you've done before, with all your other promotions. Conway Incorporated is broke, so you're pyramiding, floating a new subsidiary to keep it going. But of course, your dear, faithful stockholders must know that. Oh, no. You must make them think it's a privilege to pour more of their sand down this particular rat hole.
That's so charmingly graphic, Evelyn. Charming. Where were we? Oh, yes. And I am offering to each stockholder an opportunity to...
Right, we'll but you can't go in there. If you're making a point... Mr. Conway, I...
It's all right, Lewis. It's all right. The gentleman wishes to see me.
You. You don't even remember me, do you? You could take my money. That was easy. But now you don't even know my name.
No, but of course I do. You're Mr. Markham. Mr. Edgar Markham of West Avenue. Sit down, Mr. Markham. Mr. Lewis. Miss Spear, we can continue later.
Yes, sir. Yes.
And now, Mr. Markham, may I offer you a drink?
No.
Smoke?
No. You know why I'm here. My stock. $2,000 worth. I saved 5 years to get that money, and you were sure you'd double it. You told me so, and it's no good. It's no good, do you hear?
Don't you suppose we could talk this matter over quietly?
Quietly? You want it quietly? All right. I want my money. All of it. And I want it now. Every dollar I invested in this swindle of yours. Do you understand that, Mr. Conway? You're going to give me back that money.
Oh. Am I?
What do you sit there grinning for?
Mr. Markham, this concern of yours astonishes me. I was sure I had the confidence of all our stockholders.
Our confidence? You formed 3 companies down south 5 years ago. They all went bankrupt. And now this company is going to the wall, too.
Is it? And who says so?
Everybody. I heard it in my bank and on the street. What are you laughing at?
At you, Mr. Markham. A sober, intelligent businessman, allowing yourself to be upset by foolish sidewalk rumors. Oh, Miss Spear, please ask Mr. Lewis to... Oh, Lewis.
Yes, Mr. Conway?
Somehow, Mr. Markham has gotten some false information about our financial status. Take him and set him right, will you, Lewis? Even show him the company books if he desires.
I may see the company books.
I'd be glad to. Come along, sir.
Glad you dropped in, Markham.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, sir.
You'll get a letter in a day or so about a new subsidiary. You ought to give it some thought. It's a splendid proposition. Good day. Come in, Miss Pierce.
Yes, sir.
You heard?
Who could help us?
He had a gun.
A gun?
In his right-hand pocket. So little imagination these fools have. About some music.
Oh, Gerald, how can you go on like this? You talked that man out of here today, but he'll be back. Because you and I both know that Conway Incorporated is going to collapse. That'll mean a government investigation. Then what are you going to do?
What would you suggest?
Gerald, get out. Now, a plane, out of the country. You've more money already than you'll ever need. Oh, please, please go before it breaks on top of you. You've got to, Gerald. For my sake.
For your sake. And what will you do?
Well, I'll go with you. Oh, take me, Gerald. I don't care where. Just so you're safe and we're together.
Just so we're together.
Gerald, you're going to make me say it, aren't you? You've known for months. You must have known. You've been waiting for me to put it into words. Oh, all right, I don't care now. I love you.
Well, this intrigues me. It's taken longer than I expected.
Oh, stop laughing, Gerald.
You women can never keep business separate from a promotion, can you? So you had to fall in love with me. Why, Evelyn? Tell me. I'm interested. Because, you see, I know that you don't like me. You never have. There's a part of you that's hated me from the first. Yet now you'd run away with me. It's very funny. Don't you agree?
So. It's funny, is it? Well, laugh, then. I can laugh, too. Because you're right. I do hate you. I had an idea that somewhere... far inside of you, there was the shadow of a man. A man that I could love and respect. But I was wrong. Because you're not a man at all. You're a kind of devil.
And you would be my good angel. Is that it? No, I'm afraid you're not the type, Evelyn. And if you were... Yes. Yes, that would be next. A woman impotent of speech will turn to violence. It never fails. You'd better go now, Evelyn. At this point, a woman in your position either becomes hysterical or wildly violent, and neither alternative appeals to me. So suppose you just leave quietly. And believe me, I'm sorry for you.
Oh.
Well?
I wish I could kill you.
Who knows? Perhaps you will. Goodbye, Evelyn. What is this, Lewis? What's the idea of waking me at this hour? And you too, Thomas, you're supposed...
We had to, Gerald. It's happened. This is it.
What are you talking about?
The stockholders. They held a secret meeting tonight.
Evelyn Speer was behind the whole thing. She told the stockholders that the whole setup of the corporation was crooked from the start.
Evelyn said that, did she? No fury like a woman scorned. I might have expected this. In fact, I think I did.
You expected it? Well, then you must realize that you've got to leave the state now before they can swear out a warrant.
You're my lawyer, and you ask that, Thomas. Think of the fee you will lose if I don't stand trial.
I'm not a fool, Conway. I've gotten you out of jams before. But on this one, there's no chance. When they start digging up the other promotions that have failed, they'll compound felonies against you till, well, they have enough to send you up for life.
He's right, Gerald. You've slipped up this time.
You should know by now that I never slip up, Lewis. You say that they're to send me up for life. They won't.
Now, look, Gerald.
No, you look. Both of you. I think this is a part of my library you've never seen.
Hey.
Read some of those titles.
Textbook of Psychiatry, The Criminal Psychote, Psychology of Criminal Behavior. I don't get it.
It's quite simple. You're looking at perhaps the most complete library in this country on criminal insanity.
Yes, but what's it all about?
About the insane, Thomas, the insane. How they get that way and how they act when they are. You see, as it happens, I've been planning for just this moment.
But look, what has your knowing how insane people act got to do with
this? It's got everything to do with it, Lewis. You see, Thomas here will bear me out that there's a law in this state which says that insane persons are not liable to imprisonment for crime. They are liable to be sent to a state institution for a minimum period of a year, to be released when they prove themselves sane again. And what's a year if there's plenty of money waiting at the end of it? I wonder now if you understand.
You're going to plead not guilty by reason of insanity?
Exactly, Thomas. Exactly. Because you see, a certain Gerald Conway made up his mind just 5 minutes ago that he is hopelessly and positively insane.
Once again, the lights are being dimmed and the silver curtain rises on the second act of Expert Opinion, starring Robert Montgomery as Gerald Conway. The collapse of the Conway Investment Corporation, Gerald's arrest, and subsequent surprise plea of not guilty by reason of insanity have been headline news for weeks. And the prosecution has assured the hundreds of enraged investors that Conway's obvious attempt to evade justice will not succeed, that he will be proved sane and sent to the penitentiary. Meanwhile, Gerald Conway himself, released on bail, is at his home.
Table.
Chair.
Sickness.
Doctor.
Mountain.
Trees.
Cold.
Ice cream.
Sweet.
Bitter.
Lamp.
Light.
Hungry.
Food. Faster. Read them faster, Lewis.
Wait a minute, Gerald. You're giving the right answers for these words.
Exactly, Lewis. That's just the point. You see, this kind of a test is one they always use if they suspect a person is feigning in his insanity. Association of ideas. What other word does a given word suggest?
But you've been saying things these words do suggest.
Ah, but so does an insane person, Lewis. At least the kind of insane person I've decided to be, namely a manic depressive.
A manic depressive?
One of the subtler forms of mental derangement, Lewis. What a pity you don't know about these things. Here, let me show you. I think it's best described in this book of Altman's. Yes, here, read this.
A manic depressive type. Here, the individual is subject to violently alternating moods. In a low or depressive mood, he's frequently uncommunicative and monosyllabic. Reaction time is slow. He believes himself persecuted by friends and relatives. Often cries in self-pity, even contemplates suicide.
Go on. The manic state. Read about that.
In the opposing manic or elated state, he has exaggerated ideas of his importance. A frequent symptom is extravagant dreams and nightmares. There is a record of the patient who boasted that he dreamt of owning all the money in the world and then scattering it broadside to the poor. And in another case...
It's quite simple, Lewis. When I can learn from books like these how other insane men have acted, what's to prevent me from imitating their insanity to the last detail?
But these men who'll examine you, they'll all be experts.
And they'll be dealing with an expert, remember that. I wouldn't worry if I were you, Lewis. Another week of studying the cases in these books and I'll be ready for them. In fact, I've an idea I'm going to enjoy my little venture into madness. I'm sure of it.
Black.
White.
Girl.
Boy.
Flower.
Beautiful.
Sane.
Insane.
Laugh. Faster.
Cry.
Hope.
Fear.
Faster. Sleep.
Dream.
What makes you think these friends have tried to poison you? Answer me.
I'm trying to. I can't think. They just are.
How long have you had this idea? Where did it come from?
I don't know. Leave me alone. I'm tired.
You've got to answer. And these depressions, how often do you have them?
Leave me alone. Leave me alone. No one understands, that's all. But you do, don't you, Doctor? These times when I'm depressed, well, everybody's like that sometimes. You know that, Doctor. You know that, don't you?
But times like now, it's different. Is that it?
No, I'm myself. And I'm a genius when I feel myself. You can tell that. You're a great doctor. I am. I can make money faster than any man in this country. And not only that, it's what I'm going to do with it. Listen to me, Doctor. You'll understand. Deep.
Shallow.
Slow.
Slower. Or fast.
Running.
Fainting. I mean walking. No, you don't ask me that. Just let me be. Why can't you leave me alone? Of course I'll tell you. You want to know about me? I'm Gerald Conway. I'm the Gerald Conway. Of course I'll tell you. I'm Gerald Conway.
The court will be in order. You may continue the cross-examination, Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Your Honor. Dr. Sampson, during the course of this trial, you have heard the testimony of the other alienists who examined my client. Alienists for both defense and prosecution.
I have.
They testified that my client was definitely a manic depressive, did they not?
Yes.
But you have as yet made no definite statement as to your opinion. Now, would you, speaking as a recognized expert, swear that the defendant, Gerald Conway, is sane?
I wouldn't swear that my own mother's sane.
Please answer my question.
I wouldn't swear that he is sane. No, I agree with the others. Conway's reactions are typical of those of a manic depressive psycho.
That's all.
No more questions.
Next witness.
I'll call Miss Evelyn Spear.
Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give to be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
I do.
Take your stand.
Your name and occupation.
I'm Evelyn Spear. The past 4 years, I've been private secretary to Gerald Conway.
And naturally, in the course of business, you've seen a great deal of the defendant.
I have.
We can't hear in the jury box.
I have.
During that 4 years, Miss Spear, have you seen any action on the part of the defendant which would lead you to believe he was insane?
No. Oh, no, of course I haven't. And he's not insane. Oh, don't you all see the thing he's done? He's played a part for this court and for the doctors who examined him. You don't know Gerald Conway, any of you. He can make anyone believe anything he wants. Of course he's not insane. He's lying now, just as he's lied about everything he's ever done. You've got to find him sane and then convict him. You've got to, do you hear?
Your Honor, I move the statement of Miss Spear be stricken. Conclusion of the witness, irrelevant, immaterial, and...
Motion granted. Let it be stricken.
Miss Spear, please just answer this by yes or no. Did you ever see in Mr. Conway any signs of what appeared to you as insanity?
No.
Your witness.
And now, Miss Spear.
Thomas.
Yes?
Just ask her two questions. If she was ever in love with me, and what I told her when she admitted it. Nothing more.
But,
do as I say.
All right. And Miss Spear, are you or were you ever in love with the defendant?
I refuse to answer that question.
Could you tell us then just what the defendant said when you confessed your love for him?
I object in proper cross-examination, leading the witness, assuming a fact
not
in evidence. I
withdraw the question. That's all.
Have you further witnesses, Mr. Prosecutor?
No, Your Honor. That concludes the case.
Wait a minute.
Just a moment at the court, please.
Yes, Joe.
Your Honor, I've just been informed that Dr. Kurt Altman, one of the world's leading specialists in criminal psychology, has arrived in the city. The state asks an adjournment of this trial while the defendant is examined by Dr. Altman.
And I protest, Your Honor. We've had experts here already, plenty of them, and all of them have agreed...
Thomas, don't argue. Let him examine me.
But you can't. Why take a chance? Altman's that fellow from Vienna. He'll see through you in 5 minutes.
Really? No, I don't think so. Tell the court that we agree.
Your Honor, the defense agrees to examination by Dr. Altman.
But you don't understand, Dr.
Yeah,
Altman.
Yeah, I know you feel unhappy, but still you must talk to me. Old Altman can help you, maybe. In Europe, he has helped many who are depressed, like you are now.
There's no one can help me. I have no friends, only enemies.
Too bad. You feel like this often, yeah? You sometimes think life is not worth living, maybe.
How did you know that?
I know many things. I'm sorry for you, my son.
Oh, Doctor, you don't know what it's like. With everyone against you, alone and afraid. I never told the others this. But I am afraid. You won't let them hurt me, will you? You'll make them leave me alone. Please, Doctor. Please.
Yeah, my son, yeah. I think we've talked enough for today. Oh, guard, you'll take him back.
Yes, Doctor.
Oh, and guard. Watch him carefully. In a case like this, there should soon be a definite change of attitude. He will become elated, confident, and very talkative. When that has happened, he must be brought to me again, at once.
Yes, Doctor. Come along, Conway.
Stevens? Alton speaking. Yes, I've just sent him back. A peculiar case, Stevens. I need your help. I want you to get for me all the records of the trial and the books of the company. Don't ask me why, just get them. I told you this was a very peculiar case.
Just like you said the other day, Doctor. Conway did change just overnight. He thinks he owns the joint this morning.
Good, good. Send him in here, then leave us alone.
Yes, sir. All right, Conway, in here.
Thank you, God. Thank you. Dr. Altman. You see, I remembered. Dr. Altman, you're from Vienna, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm
sorry about the other day. I remember I was upset in a way. Just down. The blues, that's all it is. Everybody gets them once in a while. It didn't mean a thing.
Conway, I want to talk to you. Please, sit down here.
Of course, I'm glad to talk to you. It isn't very often that I meet a person on my own level of intelligence. You see, being a genius, I naturally...
I'll draw the curtain, so...
But it's too bad to shut out the daylight. It's a glorious day outside. You know that, don't you?
We will have music, the phonograph.
Yes, yes, do. I like music. I compose it myself sometimes. Melodies of... That music. How did you know?
I told you before, I know many things, my son. Now that you feel better today, tell me about yourself.
That music. Do you know what it is? It's the theme song of my victory. It always has been. I heard it first when I was just a child. I'd licked another boy in a fight, and I was on my way home from school when I heard that melody.
You have said that you are a genius. How do you know?
The things I do. Money. I've always had it. More than I could spend. I even dream about money. Do you know that?
You dream about it. Yeah. Tell me. It sounds interesting.
Why, I dreamt once that I owned all the money in the world, and I was scattering it broadside to the poor.
So now it is out.
Dr. Altman, don't you want me...
I want you to stop pretending, acting that you are insane.
Acting?
Yes, my friend. From the first, I am suspicious your reactions are those of a manic depressive, yes. But they are too quick, too positive. But now I am sure. Your dream. I own all the money in the world and I scatter it broadside to the poor. In the future, remember this, my friend. When you quote the actual words from a book, remember who was its author.
You wrote that book.
I did.
Well, this rather complicates matters. You see, Dr. Altman, I'm determined not to go to the penitentiary.
You prefer an asylum? Yes, I can understand it. Well?
How much?
How much?
For you to forget the last 5 minutes and report to the court.
That you are insane? How much would you say it was worth?
50,000.
So little? From the man who has dreamed of owning all the money in the world?
100.
No. 200,000. And you can pay it. You see, I have seen the books of your company.
You win. 1 hour after you swear that I'm insane in this courtroom, the money will be delivered to you wherever you say. Is it agreed?
Let us just say, I shall think it over.
Given this courtroom to be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
I do.
Your name? Occupation?
Dr. Kurt Altman. I'm a psychiatrist.
Inasmuch as defense has already stipulated as to your qualifications as an expert, will you tell us the findings of your examination of the defendant?
Of course.
Dr. Altman, is the defendant Gerald Conway sane or insane?
There is not the slightest doubt upon that point. Gerald Conway is insane.
He's in here. Go right in, Doc. I'll wait outside.
Thank you.
Hello, Dr. Altman.
Well, my son?
I asked them to let me see you before they took me away tomorrow. I wanted to check up. The money was delivered?
Yes, and in the correct amount.
I doubt that psychiatry has ever been so profitable before, Doctor.
I don't know. You see, I didn't have the money very long. I have already transferred it to the referee in bankruptcy of your company. Your investors will get back at least a portion of their money.
But that doesn't make sense, Doctor. If you weren't going to keep the money, why did you lie on the witness stand?
Why did I lie? You wonder about that?
Yes.
My dear young man, The testimony that I gave in court was under oath. I did not lie. You are insane.
You're joking.
No, I do not joke about such things. There are other types of insanity besides the one you feigned. On some of them, an expert is never fooled. You are insane.
You're lying to frighten me. You're lying and trying to frighten me. I know. I know.
I did not lie. You are insane.
Stop saying that. Stop saying that. It's wrong. Do you hear? It's wrong. I planned all this. You're just being taken in like all the rest.
I was not taken in. The very way in which you planned it was part of what convinced me. You are insane.
I'm not insane. I'm not insane. You're going to tell them that I'm not...
Incurably, hopelessly insane.
Stop that. Stop it. You're going to stop it or I'll kill you. I'll kill you. Do you hear? I'll kill you. I'll kill you. I'll kill
you. Hey, Doctor. Doc, you all right?
Yes. I suggest you bring a straitjacket for that poor fellow on the floor.
Yeah. He's really pretty far gone, ain't he?
Yes, pretty far. You know, did you ever wonder at the eternal justice of such things? I have.
The Silver Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from April 16th, 1939 on CBS. And the curtain comes down on this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LePaunier. Thanks for listening.